is 5 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. Two suicide car bombings in eastern Iraq killed at least 40 people, wounding dozens more late Monday. The Islamic State has claimed responsibility for the deadliest attack on a marketplace where 35 people were killed. It's unclear who is responsible for a second car bombing that occurred at a checkpoint outside Bukoba. Afghan's President Ashraf Ghani is demanding that Pakistan crack down on the Taliban after the militant group claimed responsibility for a deadly car bombing near Kabul's airport. The Afghan president's accusing Pakistan of fostering the spike in insurgent attacks on Afghanistan. Ayaz Ghul has more.
President Ashraf Ghani's criticism follows a series of attacks in Kabul during the past week, including Monday's suicide car bombing near the city's international airport. The violence has killed dozens of people and wounded hundreds more. The Taliban has claimed responsibility for most of the attacks. During televised remarks, Mr. Ghani alleges Pakistan remains a venue and ground from which messages of war are being sent to Afghanistan. Ayaz Ghul, Islamabad.
The central U.S. city of Ferguson, Missouri is under a state of emergency after a protest marking the anniversary of the shooting death of a black teenager by a white police officer. The observance of Michael Brown's death ended with gunshots and another black teenager critically wounded. He is facing charges for allegedly opening fire on police. Brown's father led a peaceful tribute to his son on Sunday.
We just got to stand together as a people. You know, once we do that, hopefully we can just go forward.
The police officer who shot Brown's son was not charged in his death. This is VOA News. Kenya and Uganda forming a partnership to carry crude from the Ugandan oil fields to the Kenyan coast. Leaders from both countries announced the agreement on Monday. Kenya's president says the project still depends on financing and security guarantees in his country. A man from the U.S., New York City, is under arrest, charged with attempting to join the Islamic State militants. Authorities say the suspect was detained by Jordanian authorities before he could make his way to Syria. He faces up to 40 years in prison if convicted of charges of conspiring to support the Islamic State. At least six police and soldiers killed in a series of attacks in Turkey, while another shooting struck the U.S. consulate in the country's largest city. The two women are suspected in the assault on the consulate in Istanbul. The leftist Revolutionary People's Liberation Party Front claimed responsibility for the attack, the shutdown operations at the diplomatic mission. Fighting between government forces and separatists intensified in eastern Ukraine on Monday. Ukraine's president is ordering his foreign minister to hold urgent talks with his counterparts from Germany, France, and Russia about the escalating violence. The Ukrainian presidential website reported that some 200 separatist fighters using tanks launched an attack around the village of Novolaspa. Police in eastern India say a stampede on Monday outside a Hindu temple killed at least 10 people and injured 15 others. Authorities say the incident happened as thousands of people took part in a religious festival. People rushed toward the temple just as the doors opened. A court in Britain has dropped an extradition case against Rwanda's intelligence chief, who is wanted in Spain on war crime charges. The court ruling Monday means that the general, Karenzi Karaki, can return home. The London court said that British law does not permit it to hear about alleged offenses committed outside the country by non-British nationals. Again, recapping some of our top stories that we spoke about earlier today in this newscast, the central U.S. city Ferguson, Missouri, under a state of emergency this morning after a protest marking the anniversary of the shooting death of Michael Brown by a white police officer, and Uganda and Kenya forming a partnership to carry crude from the Ugandan oil fields to the Kenyan coast. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm William Eagle in Washington, filling in for James Butte, who returns tomorrow. Today is Tuesday, August 11th, and here are some of the stories that we're following. In Senegal, activists push for the decriminalization of abortion.
These women can get abortions if their life can only be saved by this procedure, but they have to get the approval of three doctors, so in practice, it never happens.
Daisy Schmidt is a program officer with the International Federation for Human Rights. Zimbabwe announces that park officials will accompany hunters of wild animals.
The notion that you can kill wild animals in order to save them is something that is only promoted by the hunters and not believed by anyone in the conservation arena.
Carol Baskin of the group called Big Cat Rescue says hunting of endangered wildlife should be banned. And a spokesman for the Ivoirian Popular Front says the party will not participate in October's presidential election. A spokesman for former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo's Ivoirian Popular Front says there is a split within the party. This after rejecting reports that Pascal Lafi and Nguessan will lead the front in the upcoming October 25th presidential polls. Boubacar Kone told reporter Peter Cloti the Ivoirian Popular Front will not participate in the poll, citing prevailing political and security conditions. He says they are not conducive for peaceful, transparent, and credible elections.
There's a gentleman who said he's standing for this year's election. Mr. Fingesa is no longer part of the FCI, so he cannot be our candidate. That's the first thing I wanted to point out. Second of all, we haven't decided yet to participate in this election for many reasons. The first one is that the gentleman who is our current president is not eligible. He needs to withdraw his candidacy. The second thing we have to say is that the conditions are not yet gathered for a fair election in Cote d'Ivoire as we speak.
Is there a split in former President Gbagbo's UPI party?
Former President Laurent Gbagbo's party is not taking part in this coming election in these conditions, in the current conditions, in the sense that the Electoral Commission is imbalanced, the Constitutional Court is made up of Mr. Ouattara's friends and cannot be fair. The census for the voters is biased. There are so many problems we have to solve first.
What is your next line of action since you are not participating in the coming election?
Our next plan of action is that we have to act so that the conditions are better. We have to force the current president to start discussions with us so that the conditions can be fair.
So you are willing to engage the president and his administration to improve situations before you participate in any elections? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. We have to sit and talk and decide in a consensual way what are going to be fair conditions for this coming election.
Now, so let me ask you. So this gentleman who says he is representing former President Gbagbo's party is not representing the party, as you said, because...
No, not at all, not at all. Mr. Afi was excluded during the last Congress, which took place on April the 30th this year. He was excluded from the party. So he cannot stand on behalf of the party he does not belong to.
Is there a split? Because obviously he says he's standing for the party in the election and you're saying he's not.
There is a split. There is a split of line. He's he's no longer from our party because he's not working according to the regulations of the party. So he was excluded, as I said.
Boubacar Kone is a spokesman for a faction of the Ivoirian Popular Front, the party of former President Laurent Gbagbo. He was speaking from Abidjan with reporter Peter Cloti. Human rights groups are putting new pressure on Senegal to change its abortion laws. This after a United Nations committee of experts recently recommended the West African country decriminalize abortion in cases of rape, incest, and the threat to life of the mother. Daisy Schmidt is the program officer for women's rights at the International Federation for Human Rights. She tells reporter Ricky Shryock that nearly 20% of women inmates in Senegal are imprisoned because of infanticide, often a result of their inability to obtain an abortion.
We found out that because of the prohibition of abortion, women get illegal and unsafe abortions. There's around 50,000 illegal and unsafe abortions every year. Women risk up to 2 years imprisonment and a fine if they get an abortion illegally. And some women are pushed to actually kill their babies and commit infanticide. And it also causes dramatic consequences on the health of women who couldn't get abortion, especially for victims of rape and little girls.
Have you guys seen an increase in your research in infanticide? I mean, how often did you see this happening? What was the rate?
I don't know exactly what is the rate, but the numbers we have is that 19% of the women who are imprisoned are detained on charges of infanticide, and 3% on charges of clandestine abortion.
The law as it stands in Senegal right now is that abortion is 100% illegal in all cases, correct? There are no exceptions for rape or incest?
No, there's no exception for rape or incest, but in theory, women can get abortions if their life can only be saved by this procedure, but they have to get the approval of 3 doctors. So in practice, it never happens.
I imagine the expense alone of getting the approval of 3 doctors would mean it's prohibitive for quite a few women.
Yeah. And 4 women in Senegal are lucky to see 1 doctor in their lifetimes.
Who are the local NGOs working with within the government to try and make this happen? And how likely is it to actually, you know, is it being debated right now? Or
yes, one of our members and the Association des Femmes Juristes Sénégalaises are members of this task force. It was set up by the Ministry of Health, and they are working on a reform. And if the reform is passed, abortion could be legal in cases of rape and incest, but not if the woman's health is at risk.
What's the average sentence they are carrying out? How many years for abortion?
It's two years of imprisonment and a fine.
2 years of imprisonment if you're found guilty of abortion.
Yeah. It was a big success that the city committee issued a recommendation on abortion, because in 1994, when the CEDAW committee reviewed the Senegal for the last time, it didn't issue any recommendation on abortion, so it's a step forward.
That was Daisy Schmidt, Program Officer for Women's Rights at the International Federation for Human Rights. She was speaking to reporter Ricky Shryock from Paris. Zimbabwe has lifted a temporary ban on lion, leopard, and elephant hunts. They were imposed following the killing of Cecil the Lion last month. In a message on its website, the Zimbabwe Professional Hunters and Guides Association says the ban will be maintained in some areas in Matabeleland, North Province, where Cecil was killed by American dentist Walter Palmer. According to the association, the hunting of these animals will now be attended by officials of the National Parks and Wildlife Management, and there will be no further hunting of collared iconic animals. Violators of the new regulations will be banned for life. Reporter Gibbs Dube reached Carol Baskin, founder and chief executive of Big Cat Rescue, who says the lifting of the ban is ill-timed.
The coalition has been trying to get the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to list the lion as a threatened species, so it would make it much harder for the hunters to export their trophies.
In this case, you know, the lifting of the ban, appears to be having some conditions that if anyone wants to kill a lion, one has to be accompanied by a state official. So can that work in terms of protecting these wild animals?
I think they need an outright ban altogether. The notion that you can kill wild animals in order to save them is something that is only promoted by the hunters and not believed by anyone in the conservation arena.
How difficult is it really, Baskin, to fight for the conservation of some of these animals?
It has been very difficult because people don't know the horrible ways that these animals are slaughtered and then transported as trophies. And so I think Cecil really did an amazing job in waking the world up to what's happening there.
That was Carol Baskin of Big Cat Rescue speaking with reporter Gibbs Dubay. World outrage continues over the July killing of Cecil the lion. Walter Palmer, the hunter who killed him, says he was ignorant of Cecil's protected status at the time. But he has been widely shamed on the internet by animal rights sympathizers and environmentalists. They're calling for an outright ban on big game trophy hunting, citing its alleged cruelty and the rapid decline of Africa's wildlife. VOA's Adam Phillips reports on the controversy.
Robert Kern is president of the Hunting Consortium, a big game safari and adventure travel company based in the southern U.S. state of Virginia. He agrees that the way Cecil was killed was illegal and calls it unsporting, yet he proudly defends big game hunting itself.
We're not here to persuade anyone who doesn't want to kill animals to kill animals. I do find it a little hypocritical that the average citizen on the street has no qualms about having a steak at a restaurant, and yet he criticizes somebody else for harvesting an animal for some other purpose.
Kern says the main threat to African wildlife isn't hunting or even illegal poaching, which claims untold thousands of animals annually. He says it's loss of habitat, which is disappearing at an alarming rate due to urbanization and other factors. Kern claims that hunters are actually the friends of wildlife. A large share of the hundreds of millions of dollars he estimates they pay in taxes and fees every year goes to conserving and sometimes even extending the tracts of habitat that remain.
Usually these are on the borders of the national parks, but it effectively doubles, even triples, the amount of habitat, so there's a tremendous benefit. I'm quite happy to rationalize the offtake of 0.5% or 1% of a given wildlife population in order to preserve the other 98 or 99%. That's basically what sport hunting, trophy hunting does.
Jason Bell is the Southern Africa Regional Director for the International Fund for Animal Welfare, an advocacy group working in 15 countries worldwide. He says that the culture of official corruption in many African countries contributes to the decline of animal populations. Worse still is the widespread poverty within communities in areas where game animals are found. Bell believes that the situation can be partly reversed by treating it as an economic development issue.
The communities grant concession to private individuals. Private individuals are the ones that generate the most income. The communities kind of get thrown a bone. Purely on economic grounds, it makes no sense whatsoever. And there are alternatives.
Perhaps chief among them, according to Bell, is ecotourism, where large numbers of nature lovers come simply to observe and to photograph lions, elephants, rhinos, and other wildlife, but not to kill them. Jason Bell of the International Fund for Animal Welfare and other advocacy groups oppose trophy hunting on moral grounds.
You know, I don't understand the psychology behind it. What is it that drives someone to want to do that? I don't know.
Robert Kern of the Hunting Consortium also says he cannot explain the draw of big game hunting, at least psychologically. Yet he cannot deny its primordial emotional pull. He says the thrill of hunting may have been baked into our genes over the hundreds of millennia when humans hunted for survival. The controversy continues. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm William Eagle in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 11th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. A cataract is a clouding of the lens of the eye, leading to a decrease in vision. Cataracts may affect one or both eyes and may develop slowly. The World Health Organization says 285 million people are said to be visually impaired worldwide. 39 million are blind, and 246 million have low vision. A majority of these are found in developing countries. Jacob Mohan Tazatu is the president and CEO of the group called Help Me See. Its goal is to eliminate blindness caused by cataracts. He explained to reporter Lenore Moudou about a new campaign being launched in Madagascar.
Africa is an emerging continent of the 21st century with 1.2 billion population and about 6 million people, and according to our estimates, blind due to cataract. In Madagascar, among the 21 million people, we estimate there are at least about a million people who will need the support for cataract surgery in the next 5 to 6 years. And our goal is to eliminate cataract blindness in Madagascar. And we just launched the Madagascar campaign 2 weeks ago. Our goal is to train. And the first goal is to train at least about 15 to 20 cataract surgeons in Madagascar in partnership with the Ministry of Health, the Lions Club in Madagascar, the Lions West program, and with the Help Me See technology. The Help Me See technology is based on simulator-based training. The simulators are aviation-grade, high-fidelity simulators which can train cataract surgeons to proficiency. And along with our surgical kit technology, which eliminates infection rates, introducing a community-based surveillance system, okay. We expect to achieve that in Madagascar.
Okay. Now, what type of challenges have you come across as you work in these countries?
The biggest challenge is lack of adequately trained cataract specialists. The medical surgical training requires to be significantly improved, and there are very, very few number of surgeons against the number of population who requires those surgeries. Generally speaking, in most of the countries in Africa, there is less than one ophthalmologist for a million population. That need to change.
And you will have achieved about 200,000 surgeries, am I correct, in Madagascar?
That's correct. Help Me See has supported 200,000 surgeries, and the 200,000th surgery was done in Madagascar in the hospital in Antananarivo by Dr. Amy and one patient, Madame Florentine, living in Antananarivo. Now, that's a level of information that we can provide to the local surgical partners and to the local community so that they can solve the problem.
That was Jacob Mohan Tazatu, the president and CEO of the group called Help Me See. He was speaking with reporter Lenore Moudou. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here's Mark Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Bill. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with the netball. Wales pipped Uganda 49-47, Fiji edged Zambia 59-51, as South Africa overpowered Sri Lanka 97-19. At the Netball World Cup in Sydney, Australia on Monday. Today, Tuesday, the second round gets underway with Zambia playing Trinidad and Tobago. South Africa tackles Wales and Malawi engage Uganda. Turning to football, a first-half goal scored by Samuel Edouard propelled Tunisia's Esperance to a 1-0 triumph against Malian host Stade Malien in their mini-league encounter in the CAF Confederations Cup in Bamako on Monday. On Sunday, the match was interrupted by torrential rain. The game was completed on Monday. Staying in Bamako, although Esperance bagged 3 points from their hard-fought victory, they remain rooted at the bottom of the Group A standing after the fourth round in the mini-league. Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel leads with 9 points. Egyptian defending champions El Ahly have 7, while Stade Malien have 4. In Group B, Egypt's Zamalek and South Africa's Orlando Pirates have 9 points each. The Republic of Congo's AC Leopards have 4 points, while Tunisia's CS Faxium has 1 point. Meanwhile, the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe top Group A in the mini league in the CAF Champions League with 8 points. Morocco's Maghreb Tetouan and Sudan's El Hilal have 5 points each, while Egypt's Smouha have 3 points. Algerian USM Algiers top Group B with 12 points. Sudan's El Merrek have 7, followed by Algerian side's defending champions Entente Setif with 4 points and Mouloudia El Oulma with no point. In handball, Brazil pipped Tunisia 24-23 at the Men's Youth World Handball Championships in Yekaterinburg, Russia on Monday. Early on Sunday, Denmark outplayed Algeria 33-19 and Norway edged Egypt 24-21. Today, Tuesday, Tunisia engaged France, Algeria faced Qatar, and Egypt encounter Iceland. Finally, in basketball, China will host the 2019 Men's Basketball World Cup. The World Basketball Governing Body, FIBA, disclosed in Tokyo, Japan. When the matter was put to the vote at FIBA's central board, China secured 14 votes to 7 for the Philippines. Over 140 countries will campaign over 15 months to qualify for the 31 places up for grabs. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, Bill, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark, and have a wonderful day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday, August 11th.
I wish to thank the Man Yale Fellowship that gathered the young Africans for that 6 weeks training. It's a welcome development. I pray that the next head of state in America will continue such exercise for the benefits and for the good of African youths. Thank you, Comrade Marcy Patrick Okorocraft, Obro Premises at Tani High School, Nigeria.
Thank you, listeners, for your comments. Please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. Before we leave you, let's take a look at other news of interest to Africa. The commander of a Rwandan battalion of peacekeepers in the Central African Republic says there will be an investigation of the deaths of 4 peacekeepers who were shot and killed in Bangui, the capital, on Saturday. 8 others were wounded and hospitalized. The 4 peacekeepers were shot and killed by another soldier in their battalion. Officials say the shooter was killed by members of the battalion. Brigadier General Joseph Zambanwite says officials suspect terrorism or mental illness was the cause of the shootings. More than 800 Rwandans serve as peacekeepers in CAR, where rival forces battled for many months. That's it for this Tuesday, August 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producers Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Cloti and Ricky Shryock, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, I'm William Eagle in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very fine day.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. Around the world, the killing of Zimbabwe's beloved Cecil the Lion angered people and highlighted sport hunting in Africa. On Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they examine trophy hunting and what can be done to protect endangered species like lions, elephants, and rhinos. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Her lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.